Hey there, it's time for VoiceOver Body Shop Tech Talk number 62.
Wow.
Go figure. How we've been able to do it for all this time, who knows? Anyway, George isn't here because he's still off on his glamping trip. But Tim is an accomplished engineer and has his own studio and helps people with their home studios. So I figured he's just as good.
Let's talk tech.
All right. If you got questions, throw them in the chat room. Tech questions about home studios, all that stuff. We want to hear from you in the chat room right now so we can get to those. Anyway, time for VoiceOver Body Shop Tech Talk right now.
From the outer reaches, they came, bearing the knowledge of what it takes to properly record your VoiceOver audio. And together, from the center of the VO universe, they bring it to you now. George Whittem, the engineer to the VO stars, a Virginia Tech grad with the skills to build, set up, and maintain the professional VO studios of the biggest names in VO today. And you, Dan Leonard, the VoiceOver home studio master, a professional voice talent with the knowledge and experience to help you create a professional sounding home VO studio. And each week, they allow you into their world, making the complex simple, debunking the myths of what it takes to create great-sounding audio, answering your questions, showing you the latest and greatest in VO tech, and having a dandy time doing it. Welcome to VoiceOver Body Shop Tech Talk.
VoiceOver Body Shop Tech Talk is brought to you by VoiceOverEssentials.com, home of Harlan Hogan signature products, Source Elements, remote studio connection for everyone, VoiceActorWebsites.com, where your VO website isn't a pain in the butt, VOHeroes.com, become a hero to your clients with award-winning voiceover training, J. Michael Collins Demos, when quality matters, and VoiceOver Extra, your daily resource for VO success.
And now, live to drive from their super secret clubhouse and studio in Sherman Oaks, California, here are the guys.
Well, hi there. I'm Dan Leonard.
Tim Friedlander.
And this is VoiceOver
Body Shop,
or VO BS. Tech Talk. We're talking tech.
Better than TikTok. I don't talk TikTok.
You guys want to know about home studio stuff. Mm-hmm. And Tim and I happen to know an awful lot about home studios because we've built our own studios and helped many, many people build their home studios. And, it really doesn't depend on who you are, but it is a matter of having the right space in which to record. As far as I'm concerned,
it's the most important thing.
It's acoustics is 90% of the quality of your sound.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of things you can do that go wrong with your sound, but usually it's something exterior. And so we're going to talk about that. If you've got a question, again, throw it in the chat room. And I know Jeff Holman is in there monitoring the chat room with like he's glued on it. And we can get those questions answered for you. And those are important questions because they're about your home studio.
Yes.
So anyway, let's talk about our philosophies of home studios. But first, actually, I have to remind you that one of the things that that George and I do when George is here is we help you with your home studios. Mm-hmm. And we all have businesses. Now, I take it you suggest to people, do you actually have a system where you consult with people and say, I'm going to help you build your home studio? Or is it more along the lines of, why don't you try this and why don't you try that?
It depends on what, I don't do it as a living.
Right. You don't have a shingle hanging out in front of the door.
People reach out to me and they ask, I'll give some feedback. And then if it's, beyond that, if I have the time, I'll help more, or I'll send them to you and George.
Which
I've done many times. Yeah. Whether I have the time or the capability, or, sometimes it's something so unique that it's beyond my capability of trying to learn something and figure out something that you guys already know.
We've done everything.
Absolutely. Yes.
Thousands and thousands of studios.
Yep.
If you'd like to work with me, all you have to do is go over to my website, which is homevoiceoverstudio.com, where I have my legendary specimen collection cup.
Yes.
You click on that. It's a Dropbox, and you can send me an MP3 of your audio. I want it raw. I want to hear what your space sounds like, not what you're doing to your audio, because generally people are messing with their audio too much, and that's where they go wrong. I got some audio today that's like, I have a USB mic and I'm using this interface. Okay.
You could be.
You know, and then I listen to the audio and I'm like, yeah, that's pretty much what's going on.
Sounds like,
there's nothing I haven't heard, although sometimes it's pretty amazing what you hear. The people don't realize that the things that are going on in their space.
Yes. Somebody sent me a sample of them literally recording in a bathroom. and they were like, is this going to work? And I a lot of times say, I'll say, wow, it sounds like you're recording in a bathroom. And they sent me a picture and I said, you're literally recording in the bathroom. Like, that's not going to work. They had put a towel over the towel rack to try and cover a mirror. That's not going to work, unfortunately, because there are four other sides.
Usually tiled.
And tiled as well, yes.
You know, and the shower door is open.
Oh,
God, amazing what those can sound like. Yeah, I've gotten a lot of those, too. But if you'd like to work with me, go over to homevoiceoverstudio.com. And, you know, if they want to talk to you, where would they go?
Soundbox.la. Soundbox.la. Nice and simple.
Okay. Yeah. Makes it nice and easy. So let's talk a little bit about our philosophies of home, you know, home studios, because first off, there's something I'm going to do, and this is something we're going to promote with World Voices. Stop using the term home studio, because I've been talking to people all over the place and producers and stuff like that. And they're like, we don't trust home studios. So we can change the nomenclature of it and call it a personal professional studio.
Great.
Yeah. And I think if people would start using that terminology, then when you say, if instead of saying you have a home studio, which immediately invokes thoughts in somebody's head of socks hanging on the doorknob or a bra or nylons or towels, all those sorts of things that might be hanging out in your house.
Recording in a bathroom,
in which case there'd be lots of towels.
Lots of towels,
Or no towels. Right. Or they're on the floor. I think it would behoove us all to stop calling them home voiceover studios and call them personal professional studios. Okay. I mean, you and I have personal professional studios.
Yeah.
You know, my actual ventilation system is in your studio.
It is my studio. Absolutely. You know. Has been for years. It keeps it nice and quiet.
Yeah.
Cool and quiet.
Yeah. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
But what's most important to you? Now, you work with a lot of people. I'm sure you work with a lot of people remotely, aside from bringing them into that fabulous facility you have, because you're also a musician, a very accomplished musician.
Musician originally, originally, I'm a clarinet player, originally classically trained clarinet player, which was my undergrad degree, jazz guitar, and then master's in music education. So music is how I got started, is how the studio got started originally. I built a studio. I did a lot of music for P90X too. Mm-hmm. And that was our very first job that I did in my studio, was writing and recording 14 hours of music for P90X too. And over the years grew into a voiceover studio kind of based on the needs of the people in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we got started.
But what's your philosophy? Now coming from a music background, I've been in there, I've watched you work, and you run that Pro Tools and you're running all this stuff that nobody should have to do. It's your job to do that because you're working with all these people. Yeah. It's not the software that makes people sound great.
It's the talent. First of all, if you don't have the ability to do this, and there's very few people honestly that I've come across that couldn't, with work and the time and the desire to do it, be successful at it. But then it's the space. The space becomes then the most important thing that you're dealing with. And then from there becomes finding something. For me, what I suggest mics is finding a mic that's going to pick up and represent your voice most authentically for the quality of your voice. Because some mics are going to sound better on some people to my ear. Mm-hmm. From a musical standpoint, the tone and timbre and all these things that I listen for, And I found this, you know, primarily for myself, the very first time I ever used, I was at a studio and I used a Sound Deluxe mic. Mm-hmm. And everybody in the studio went, wow, that's what you really sound like. Because it was the first time that a microphone captured my voice as it sounded in person, in real. So that was, you know, so I listened for a lot of those things. My philosophy comes from instruments and how I specifically dealt with parents buying instruments for their children when they're first starting out, how to buy instruments. So that's my philosophy is based on that. And it changed a lot over the years. Originally, my philosophy was, well, just go buy a $99 clarinet or a $99 trumpet. And if the kid doesn't like it, no big deal. You throw it away. So problems with that I ran into. And when I was studying my master's at Boston University, this actually came up, this specific question came up, and we had a long discussion over the course of days and weeks about how do you talk to parents about what to buy their instrument. Not every parent can go out and buy the best instrument, and sometimes you have to buy what you can afford.
Right.
So my philosophy is to buy the best thing you can afford. Mm-hmm. Invest in something that's going to be quality. You're going to have a piece of equipment that's going to last. And you're going to find something that is going to probably make you sound more the way you think you should sound if you're in a larger studio. And a student who plays instruments that's easy to play, easy to operate, and makes them sound good is more likely to continue with that instrument. So I've taken that philosophy into voiceover, that if you have a setup and you go into your studio, in your space, on your microphone, and your equipment, and you sound just as good as you did if you were at my studio or Lime or any of the big studios in LA, you're going to go, wow, I really like doing this. I like the way I sound. I'm really excited about it. I sound so good and I want to keep doing this versus, man, I really wish that I could sound better at home and that I didn't sound so terrible on this microphone. And I hate it because I hate listening to myself on my microphone or the equipment that I have, or it's too difficult to operate.
Right.
So my philosophy is basically buy the best thing you can afford. You're going to sound more like the way you think you want to sound from a musical standpoint. And at the very least, at the end, doesn't work out, you have something that you invested in that you can resell and probably make some money back on, as opposed to just having a disposable trumpet, clarinet, saxophone, interface, microphone.
Right. Okay. So,
and we are very different in that.
I not being a musician,
right.
You know, I can play a kazoo. I can play three chords on a ukulele.
Right.
That's about it.
That's all you need on a ukulele anyway. That's every song. True. Add one more chord and you can play every song ever written.
You got to teach me the other
yeah,
chord.
Exactly.
But
F sharp minor, you'll be set.
Okay. I know F minor.
Though. Okay. Okay.
Yep. Anyway, my philosophy is keeping it to the basics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I believe in having a great microphone? You know, like you said, you want to have the most expensive thing. Get the best thing you can afford.
Best thing you can afford, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's always a matter of, to me, it's always the space.
Absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
Where is it you're going to be recording?
Yeah.
I find that if someone has a really nice walk-in closet, you know, that's in a reasonably quiet place, I just saved them $6,000.
Walk-in closets are great.
Oh, they're fabulous.
They're phenomenal.
Especially with lots of clothes in
them. Yes.
So, you know, generally I'm always like, let's find the best place in your place of residence that's quietest and that will, you know, not reverberate very much.
Yeah.
And if it's, you know, if you got a blank wall or it's in somewhat of an empty space, how do you treat it? And I find, especially with a lot of beginners, the major problem they have is over projection. That's what causes many, many acoustical problems, because the louder you talk, the more the acoustics of the room come into play.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, I teach people, use your indoor voice. You know, you're only talking to one person.
Yeah.
You know, if you're listening on the radio, there might be thousands of people listening to you, but there's only one person listening to you at a time, and you're trying to get an emotional, personal connection with them. So you use your indoor voice, like you're having a cup of coffee, and you know. So can we talk about diarrhea? You know that sort
can
of.
Can we
thing.
Not?
Then well, or we don't have to, but but if you have to talk about it, you know, do it in a way that is in a very personal way.
Yeah.
Because if you talk quietly, and you've got a good microphone that's not noisy, which is really the problem. I think a lot of people, you know, when they buy a cheap USB mic or a mic under, say, $100, and we see a lot of that.
Or there's a bunch that people have been buying under the $49 range, that have been. I've seen way too many of these. And they're generic. If it's a generic microphone on Amazon, it's going to sound like a generic microphone on Amazon.
Right.
You're better than that if you want to be a talent, and you can do better than that.
Right. Don't buy stuff off Facebook.
But my entire wardrobe is based off Facebook these days, man. They know me really well.
If it looks good, it is good. But, you know, when it comes to microphones, that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah.
But to me, it's always acoustics first. Absolutely, no sound coming in, minimal reflection.
Yeah. And I learned that from you. I mean, I changed my, or that became my go-to. After all of the years of us discussing back and forth, is definitely start with the space. Start with the space.
Yeah. Second is proper microphone technique, people don't. They're like, "Is this proper mic technique?" I find, why is the mic upside down? So you can see your script, and you're not. You really want to forget the microphone is there. I mean, sometimes you see, you know, video of people doing voiceover and they're like really getting into it. I find, especially if people see pictures of people using a microphone like that, they're usually wearing headphones and there's always a pop screen.
They have headphones on really tight. And they're,
It's not a picture of someone doing voiceover. It's probably somebody singing.
Probably.
You know, and that's not the same thing. When you're singing, you're using a lot of SPL. You're really pushing the mic. You don't have to use as much gain, but when you're talking subtly and quietly, you got to push the gain. And if you have an interface that has a preamp, that's you're going to get hissing. So it's important that you use the microphone properly, that you have a microphone that is not overly sensitive, especially if you're in a marginal environment, and try and, you know, find something that's, you know, $150 to $200, you should be a good mic to start with. And as I like to say, you don't buy great equipment to get work. You work to get great equipment. Falls in line with your instrument analogy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well. And the better you become, you know, you buy a better guitar and then you sound better. But, you know, a great guitar player can make a crappy guitar sound really good.
That's true.
If you know how to work the instrument. If you know how to work the instrument with the microphone. And then the other thing also is make sure you know which is the front of the microphone, because it is a surprising amount of people.
Why does it sound muffled?
Wow. Talking into the back of a microphone.
Yeah. It's usually the reason for that.
Yeah. That's one of the most common problems that I've run into in this last 18 months is people just buying or
talking into the
microphone. Well, because, you know, you see it on a lot of people look probably, you know, the RE20, right? Where you're talking in the front of it and they think, oh, well, it's a silver microphone. It looks like that microphone and a radio. And so we're going to, like, you know, 416, we're talking into the front of it.
Right.
But this, you're talking into the side of it because that's where the capsule is.
Right.
And you got the name on it. It's got the, you know, so
talk into the logo.
Talk into the logo.
And the pickup pattern.
Yep.
Especially here on the Harlan Hogan mic.
Yeah. And it's so nice when that is. I love it when that's the solution. Turn your microphone. Cool. There you go.
It's amazing.
Awesome. Thank you.
It's a miracle.
Yep.
It sounds fabulous.
But I always preface it with, don't be offended if I ask you this question. You're not the first person I've asked this question of, and it happens more frequently than you think. But are you sure you're talking into the right side of the microphone?
Right.
And 9 times out of 10, they're like, oh, I'm not. Let me take the foam off the top of it. Oh, wow, it's not a front fire microphone.
Right. What we call a side address microphone.
Side address, exactly. Yeah.
Now, I've got you on the 416 here, which, you know, there's also a different technique to that. But essentially the same. It's all positioning and keeping the mic like at eye level and having your copy under here and forgetting the mic is there and do your thing as an actor. We had, you know, Myrna Velasco on last week and she was fabulous because she's just not into the microphone. She's just into doing the voice.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, what I find.
And into the character.
And into the character. Yeah. I think a lot of people get lost with the sound of their voice.
Absolutely.
And that's not what voiceover is about.
No.
Unless you got a great set of chops like Tim Friedlander.
But even, you know, what this is now is a lot of non-announcer, conversational, people who don't do voiceover because they want that reality.
Right.
They want the realism in this. And this is, I made a reference when Myrna was here to the authenticity that happens in that first read.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times in that very first read you have, you're not thinking about how you sound. You're thinking about trying to decipher the copy and figure out how to make your way through it. And there's this realism and authenticity that comes out in that first read.
Right.
That a lot of times then gets lost as you try to make this read better and sound more like you're doing voiceover or more like you're doing something with this, with that read.
Right. My last piece, because it's three pieces.
Okay. I mean,
It's the acoustics.
Yep.
It's microphone technique. Yep. And the one thing that, if you came out of broadcasting or if you've done any recording professionally, it's setting proper input levels.
Yes.
People don't get that. You know, you get these little tiny waveforms. You know, as long as you've got, you know, a nice fat modulation and not over-modulated.
Right.
And you've got the right mic positioning and you've got the right acoustics. It's going to sound, as I say, the way what it's supposed to sound like, whistle.
Right.
There's a way it's supposed to sound. Now, how it ends up on the other end by the end user, an engineer, a producer, they're going to do stuff to it.
Yeah.
Not your job. Mm. Your thoughts?
I agree with that. One of the knowing what that level is. Of what's a healthy record level. I've actually over the last couple of years have started recording lower and lower, higher bit rate, higher quality sample rate than I'm recording at,
right.
And recording overall quieter volumes. Then I could take that audio and manipulate it as needed. You've got a much bigger range.
Right. As long as it's clean.
Yeah. And that's really I err on the side of less volume when I record, and then I can edit it up from there as needed when I'm, you know, if I do an audition, I produce my auditions and send them out as if they could go on, go to broadcast, whatever that may be. So they sound professional.
Right.
There's no broadcast standard or quality that we're going for, but a professional sounding piece of audio that they could essentially throw into the spot. And if they wanted to use the audition, that's where, when I do my auditions, that's what I aim for.
Right. Because a lot of times
that's where it goes. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've seen probably three or four auditions in the last couple of weeks that said, send us a WAV file because they made us use your audition. That's great. I'm all for that. Like, take this audition. I mean, a lot of times you go in and you do the job and it's exactly like that. Just use the audition. It sounded great, you know?
And
do what you need.
And they send you money and it's fabulous. You're
done. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah. So our philosophies are pretty much the same. Like you said, you've learned from me, as a musician, though, there's a big difference between recording music and recording a voiceover.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you you can see, I see it a lot with musicians who come in who do voiceover, especially singers who are so trained.
And love the mic.
Well, focused on the pitch and the tone and the timbre and the placement of the voice, because it has to be in that exact spot. If you're doing opera, you want it to be in a certain area. If you're doing musical theater, if you're doing Broadway, all these things have a sound to them, in addition to the character that you're portraying.
Right.
There's a sound, it's a whole different beast. It's a whole different beast, voiceover versus music, and to a certain extent, the microphone, what you're using in voiceover, doesn't matter. I just said that.
Thank you.
Whereas you come in and do music and I'm going through microphones and preamp chains and compression and trying different preamps to find what's going to most authentically give me that tenor saxophone sound the way it sounds in my face. I want it to sound that way on the microphone.
Right.
And the voice, so I guess when I go back to my Sound Deluxe example earlier, was that microphone makes my voice sound recorded the same way that I do in person. And in that sense, also people are like, that's your mic right there, because that's exactly what you sound like.
Right.
Your recorded audio sounds exactly like you sound. Tone, timbre, pitch, all of that stuff sounds exactly the same way you do as if you're talking to me in person.
Right. But you have to have a sharp ear to do that.
As a musician,
I'm sure your ear is a little bit more tuned to that sort of thing than the average person. But if someone is just starting out, does that type of microphone decision matter all that much?
Not when you're first starting out. You want something that is going to sound good. And as you learn how your voice and what sounds good and what sounds right for your voice, then you can grow into microphone selections and you can pick from a 416 or U87 or the Gefells, Rode, any of these mics, some of the sound that sound right for your voice.
Right.
You know, when I send people samples, I don't even ask anymore. I do ask, but I don't read right off the bat. I'm not looking and saying, oh, they're using a U87, so I expect it to sound like this. I listen to it first.
Right.
I was like, cool. It sounds like you. It sounds clean. Sounds crisp. And if I put that in with other recorded audio that I have from other talent in their home studio, it would fit fine. Great. Mm-hmm. Now, let me see what microphone you're using. Oh, yeah. Perfect. Fine. That mic's great for you.
But you can't tell if by listening to different people with different mm-hmm. voices in different environments, you could never tell what specific microphone they're using.
Not usually. You can like a 416, you can use a pick out.
Yeah.
A 416 is a little more specific in its sound. But you know, a U87 versus a U87 clone versus a Rode NT1 or a Rode NT1A. A lot of times the Rode NT1As, I can tell, tend to be a little bit harsh to my ear in relation to other microphones that I've heard. But no, like if you've got a lot of times you can't really tell. And a lot of times is a great example is that I bought a U87 last year in the middle of the pandemic because as a studio, I need to be able to have a U87. The client's asking for a U87. I can say, great, I have a U87, not a U87 clone or right. copy.
Right.
A and B them, blind test. Everybody picked the clone as a better sounding microphone versus the U87. But you put somebody on a U87 and you record that and listen back and you go, yep, that's what voiceover is supposed to sound like. It's got such the right sound and it feels right.
Right.
The U87 feels right. It's the best way I can say it. When I hear it, but not for everybody. Right. It doesn't sound great on everybody.
Well, but everybody hears differently.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And everybody, you know, to me, it's always been about, you know, the idea isn't to sound great. It's to sound like you.
Sound like exactly.
You want to capture you as you exist.
Yeah.
And now a good microphone is going to capture you as you exist.
Yep.
A crappy microphone is going to not do that.
Right.
But what's the cutoff between a crappy and a usable mic? Like, right. And as we say, when it comes to selecting mics, it's like being, you know, at the checkout counter in the supermarket, looking at the candy and mints, which one do you pick?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so,
well, you know, you don't pick the generic over here. You pick, you know, the stuff that you know, I guess, is the best way that I say it. Like, there's a few generic things out there that I've heard a few people buy, or the one particular brand people have been buying off Amazon that is not working. Yeah. And if the only place you can find it is on Amazon, if it does not exist anywhere else, that's probably not the mic.
Smart. All right. Yeah. Now we know that our philosophies sort of
not that far apart. There's no, some, you know, there.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to answer some of your questions right after these important messages. Don't go away.
Hi, this is Bill Farmer and you are watching VoiceOver Body Shop. It's great.
From VoiceOverEssentials.com, it's the relationship savior, the multicolor LED VO recording sign, not just a stock on the air or recording sign. It's our exclusive voiceover recording sign. This brilliantly lit LED 20-color beacon tells everybody at home, which is currently everybody, hey, I'm auditioning, recording, podcasting, narrating, or broadcasting here, and a few moments of relative quiet would be very much appreciated. What's more, the wafer-thin remote control lets you choose a multitude of options, from color to brightness, flashing to fade in and out. You can even set up your own personal codes. Red means I'm recording. Blue, playing back. Green, it's a wrap. Plug in the 7-foot-long cord and hang it on a doorknob or wall hook using the included chain. For voice workers, silence really is golden. And gold is one of the 20 colors you can choose from. Order yours now for just $69.95 from VoiceOverEssentials.com. That's VoiceOverEssentials.com.
Well, hello there. I bet you weren't expecting to hear some big-voiced announcer guy on your new orientation training for Snapchat, were you?
Stick around. You don't want to miss this. Look what you made me do. Power 103.9.
At Target, we want you to come as you are. Be comfortable. Okay, maybe not bathrobe comfortable.
Pants for the customer in aisle 4, please. Nuevo México necesita un cambio. La representante Michelle Lujan Grisham ha luchado por nuestro estado en la Cámara de Representantes.
Watch anywhere, anytime, on an unlimited number of devices. Sign in with your Netflix account to watch instantly at Netflix.com.
The ice cream maker is a big risk that can have huge rewards. Until you forget to turn it on.
Well, that's it, guys. Time is up.
Hey, it's JMC. Thanks for watching the VoiceOver Body Shop. If you're demo ready or looking to get there, check out jmcdemos.com and see a sample of our work. Now let's get back to Dan and George and this week's Tech Wisdom.
And we're back.
We are.
On VoiceOver Body Shop. And we have to talk about one of our great sponsors. Mm-hmm. Great company. You know, we know Robert Marshall, who's the president of Source Elements, mm-hmm. and he's a guy that will help you out if we ask him.
Yeah.
but it helps to know those types of people.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they have a great product. It's called Source Connect. Yeah. And for years and years and years, the professional standard in studio to studio communication was ISDN. You had to have this expensive box and you had to dial the number and usually you had to pay for the charges. Right. It was a pain in the tuchus, I'll tell you. It's gone by the wayside. Finally, yep. George and I have been doing this show for 10 years and we had been predicting the end of ISDN for 10 years.
Happened last week.
I saw it in the LA Times.
Yep.
ISDN is dead. but the best way to today, because everybody's got internet,
yeah,
and an inexpensive way and an efficient way to do it is with Source Connect.
Correct.
A lot of people are intimidated by it. Mm-hmm. You know, I have it, you have it.
Yep.
Once you get it set up properly, which is
that's the important step right there, though.
That's the one
a lot of people skip.
And they will help you with Source Elements.
They're great to
or
help with that.
Tim will help you, or mm-hmm. I will help you. George will help you. We will. Show you how it's not rocket science, but once it's set up, it's simply a matter of taking your mouse, clicking on the icon, mm-hmm. putting in your password, and connecting. It really isn't that hard. And what it does for you is it allows you and your microphone and your system and your studio to broadcast to another studio in real time. They can hear you, they can talk back to you, and they can, it's like being on the other side of the glass.
They can even record you.
If they're on the other side of the country.
Yep, absolutely. And they can record you, which is important, right into your DAW. I take Source Connect right into my Pro Tools, record a track on Pro Tools as if that quality and the person in my booth sound exactly the same.
And that's what they get on the other end. It's, you know, they've improved the technology on it. They've made it's reliable. And you got to have it. So go over to sourceelements.com and check out all the things they have with Source Connect, the different types of Source Connect that they have. Mm-hmm. But start off with something basic. You can buy it monthly.
Yep.
You can buy a lifetime license. And then you have it. If you're really committed to your voice acting and you're making money and you have to do remote sessions, you have to have Source Connect because ISDN is... Is it really gone?
Literally, as of last week. They sent out the announcements last week for Los Angeles that they were going to be phasing out. I lost mine in 2016 when they went from $49 a month to $750 a month.
Yeah. I sold mine to Bob Sauer in 2012.
Oh, nice.
And he's still using it. Amazing.
I have my codec sitting on my desk. It's in my rack. It still sits there.
It can be used as a doorstop.
Exactly.
But anyway, go to Source Elements and check them out. Thanks for being our sponsor all these years. We really appreciate it.
You're watching VOBS.TV. I don't know why. It's crazy what they do here. I think I'm going to go somewhere else and have a cheese sandwich.
And we're back.
All right.
Answering people's questions.
Yep.
That's the thing about this show. When George and I are working together on this, the thing we love the most is answering people's questions. If you got a question for us, you still got time to throw it in the chat room. And Jeff Holman will, if he's still hanging out, will get that question to us, and we will answer that question. First question comes from our good friend sitting out in the desert there, Jack DeGolia. He says, I'm having an issue with Isotope RX8 on my new MacBook Air M1.
There's a lot of things in that sentence.
Yeah, but I think it starts with RX-8.
And then MacBook Air 1, M1 as well.
Yeah. Now, Thomas, who is the creator of Twisted Wave, mm-hmm. says it's not a Twisted Wave issue. See trailing message. We'll get there. Isotope says they don't support Twisted Wave. Do you guys have any suggestions? Luckily, I still have my Mini running OS Catalina without issues with RX-8.
Use your Mini running OS Catalina without issues for RX-8.
Well, there you go, Jack. Next question. I mean, a lot of people use RX-8. Now, here's something we were talking about our philosophies, and this is one of the things that we sort of got into.
Yeah.
And that is almost every piece of equipment we use, a couple of minor exceptions, was never designed for doing voiceover. It was all designed for making music. Yeah. With the exception, perhaps, of the 416.
Though I gotta say, we have done All of our rap vocals for the last 3 years have been on the 416, and they sound phenomenal. We do all of our MCs for the Urban Renewal Project. We've used this 416. It sounds amazing.
It's a great mic.
Yeah. It's a great mic.
And you can hammer nails with it, and it's a Road Warrior. Yep. That's what it's built for. It was actually built for Electronic News Gathering. And, you know, it's a video mic. But for some reason, the proximity works really, really nice on it.
Yeah, when they're a tank, I throw out my bag when I go on tour and just in my backpack, not a case or anything.
It's my road mic, too, when amazing. I decide to take stuff on the road.
Yeah.
But most of it was designed for making music. Uh-huh. And with the exception, perhaps, of Harlan Hogan's VO1A mic. Mm-hmm. You know, they were all designed for vocalists or for instrumentation.
Yep.
They're not sitting around in boardrooms going, do we need to make a voiceover microphone?
Right.
They're not. We're just borrowing all this technology and using it for our own purposes. Now, how does that relate back to RX-8? Yeah. And people wonder, what's RX-8? RX-8 is a sound cleaner. To me, it's like it was designed to fix old vinyl records.
Right. Yeah.
And it's great at that. It's fabulous.
Yeah.
But I find a lot of people really rely on it too much that they think, well, I don't have to, I can have a marginal space because I can clean it up with RX-8. That's a
different issue. Yeah.
You know, I mean, usually something like that, RX-8, not only is it for cleaning up stuff, but it's for manipulating the waveforms and digitally stretching it and doing stuff to it that generally you don't have to do.
Right.
Now, why does Jack use RX-8?
I use it all the time.
And what do you use it for?
I use it for all of those times when I want to salvage a great performance with a very minor tech problem.
Mm-hmm.
The plosive on it is great.
Mm-hmm.
The declipper is phenomenal on that thing. You can salvage. I've salvaged, especially when I'm running. If I'm running a session, I get a talent who gives me something really loud, unexpected. It's a great performance. I can salvage that 99% of the time with the declipper.
It can really get it down to what it's, how does it do
amazing. That? I have no idea. It's magic. It's isotope. It's they do what they do. I use the deplosive and I use the mouth. They do have some, like they have mouth declick that I believe that they developed, I believe, based on feedback from the audiobook community.
Mm-hmm.
But don't hold me to that one. That's what I've heard. Yeah. And I use that a lot of times if I have just some really like some mouth noise, some mouth clicks that I have on a talent again. Or for myself, I use that a lot of times on myself. For my rigs, I'll just throw a real basic declicker, a mouth declick on there to get rid of the very subtle stuff that I want to smooth out on there.
Do you do it individually?
I do it individually on each section that I want to do it on. I don't wholesale do it on a track, especially like the deep breath is in there. But if you do that on an entire track, you end up trying to cut. You're going to end up cutting off transients, so the beginnings and endings of words,
right?
And it's not going to work. But it's a great tool to use judiciously and knowledgeably, and to just wholesale throw it on something and just say, here, declick this entire 3 hours of audio. First of all, it's taking forever to do.
Right.
But, you're going to end up with artifacts or issues in it a lot of times that end up causing more problems than if you were to just isolate what you need to get. At least that's the way that I operate, is isolate what I need to fix and fix those spots.
Right.
This is, Jack. I mean, luckily, you still have a Mini running OS Catalina without any issues with RX-8. Unfortunately, the M1s, I had one for a week and I ended up taking it back. And I'm waiting for the next iteration to come out. But you know, I didn't have any issues, but I was running Isotope RX8 and Pro Tools. Mm-hmm. Pre-Pro Tools being, you know, unauthorized or approved to work with the M1s. And it worked, but it's so hit and miss, and it's just too much new stuff happening all at once to have any answer for that. I have no answer for it, except to say that you have a mini running OS Catalina without any issues at RX8. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't use RX. I've got Adobe Audition and I just use the spectrogram in there.
Yeah.
I mean, how much do you have to do to your audio to try and do that, all that kind of stuff? To me, everything is physical. If you've got mouth clicks, hydrate. If you've got too many breaths, and I'm sure we both know people that apparently can't get through an entire sentence without taking a breath.
Yep.
They have this staccato sort of delivery.
And breath removal is a whole other issue too.
Like
be careful with that.
Right. It's like, I mean, you gotta be like an athlete. You gotta be in good condition. You gotta be able to read an entire sentence without taking a breath.
Well, it's the same thing that when we're having, I'm not thinking about where I'm breathing in this conversation. You're not thinking about where you're breathing in this conversation. You could talk for 45 minutes, not think about one possible spot for breathing, but you give yourself a 30-second spot on, you know, in a script, and all of a sudden you're like, don't know where to breathe in this spot. I can't get through the running out. We get to the end. It's just, if you talk, thinking, reading thoughts and not sentences and punctuation, and your breath will come much more naturally.
Right.
Is he running Twisted Wave in? I don't know. I am so unfamiliar. My reaction when the first time I opened Twisted Wave.
Yeah.
Where are all my controls? Nope. Never using that again. I want to be able to control everything. So I know Twisted Wave exists, and I've seen it enough, and I've used it enough times to know that I don't know enough about it to be able to answer that question.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Is he running Twisted Wave in Rosetta? Well, if you've got an M1, it's probably
have to be in Rosetta.
It's got to be in Rosetta anyway.
I believe so. Yeah.
Until Thomas fixes it or changes the program.
So, yeah.
You know, if you don't know what we're talking about, there's a program inside the M1 chip or the new Macs that some programs do not work with it, and it translates it in real time to work with the M1.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go figure.
That's another layer of possible places to things to go wrong. Unfortunately,
absolutely, so. Absolutely. Gracis Kahuria. I bet I pronounced that right. What is your opinion of the Shure MV7 microphone for work? How does one get a sample out in today's times? MP3. Thank you in advance. A
couple of questions there.
Yeah. Well, one, don't.
What's that?
Don't use the MV7. I mean,
okay. I don't have an opinion, unfortunately.
I can guess what it probably sounds. Mm-hmm. I hear it's a really cool sounding microphone. Okay. If you're a professional voice actor, use professional equipment. You know, if you're on the road, you're doing auditions, it's probably great because you can plug it into your iPhone or your iPad. And if you use it properly, it's going to sound okay, if you're in the right environment. But is it going to sound as good as a 416 or a Harlan Hogan VO1A or, you know, various other professional XLR microphones? I sort of doubt it.
Yeah. I do not know. I have not used it or experienced it to know what it is or how it works, unfortunately.
Yeah. I would not recommend it as a mainline voiceover microphone. Yes. Cool. You know, I would get some professional equipment. That's the most important thing. Dave G, watching us on YouTube, what is the silliest setup Tim has stumbled upon in a home studio? Me too. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mentioned the bathroom earlier.
Yeah, well.
So somebody actually recording in a bathroom. Pretty consistently, I see just lots of microphone, reflection shield in a big wide open room. And that concept in and of itself is silly because those reflection shields were made for musicians and they stop the reflection on one side of the microphone.
Right.
Then you got that side and that side and that side and that side and that side.
Exactly.
And that generally would be the silliest thing, but the bathroom is by far the silliest.
One of the things that George and I did, you know, when we started out here in California, so we want people to send in pictures of their studios. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing the creativity people have with their studios.
Oh, yes.
I mean, the best one, I can't remember her name. It was a bunk bed with mattresses turned upside down, all mattresses.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with a mattress sort of like hanging, you know, like that.
Yeah.
And it sounded okay.
Yeah.
You know, and as George and I always say, if it sounds good, it is good.
Mm-hmm.
Which you clearly have heard before. But you know, that was one of my favorites. Walking into people's places, and I'm like, "You're recording in here?" you know, and they're like stuck in a closet, you know, and it's like, "Do you feel comfortable in here? Does this work for you in here?"
Yeah.
You know, and then it comes down to the discussion of, is it the room quiet? If the room is quiet, that opens up all sorts of possibilities, because then you're just talking about sound treatment and you know, stuff that's going to reduce the reflections.
Yep.
But people recording in their living rooms,
vaulted ceilings.
I have to play you this audio after we're done. It's like, what on earth is this person thinking? People don't know what it's supposed to sound like.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they people say, "You've got a great voice."
Right.
And they record themselves and they're, you know, 500 feet from the microphone, or they're right on top of the microphone. Sorry, Sue. you know, I guess a lot of people starting out in voiceover, there's a lot of stuff they don't know what they don't know.
Right. Yeah. And I was like, one of the other silliest things that I see a lot is people who use GarageBand and use the voiceover preset in GarageBand. And I've spent multiple hours tracking down the point where they had turned on. Now I go to it if I ask if they're using GarageBand. The voice, if anybody ever knows, use GarageBand.
It always has reverb on it.
Right. The voiceover plugin has echo and reverb.
Right.
But the way GarageBand is set up, you don't know that.
Right.
Unless you go in and take apart the preset and find all the hidden stuff that's there. And the first time I found that, I was like, why are you putting echo and reverb on your, why would you have a voiceover plugin? It literally is called, I think it's called voiceover.
Right.
Or it may be called voice narration plugin preset. And that's the silliest thing I see as far as the DAWs go. You just shouldn't. shouldn't put echo and reverb on your voice.
No, that's not your job. No. An engineer like you might be doing a spot and mixing a bunch of different elements together. You might use
and then
reverb.
You know how to use it, and then you find the reverb that's appropriate for the space that that voice is supposed to be in,
right,
and the size of the room and the surface that they're on, all of that other stuff. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I remember doing a pickup with somebody who just happened to be visiting, and he says, "I did these things, but the room wasn't that great. You know, can I do them here?" I'm like, "Sure, fine." Yeah. And then we found a reverb that matched the crappy sound of the other room.
Right. Yeah.
So and it worked really, really well.
Yeah.
Chris Robin asks, IRT mic comparisons. IRT. Why do I not know what IRT means? How does a TLM-103 stand against a U87? It's comparing apples and oranges, or persimmons and...
How's an F-150 stand against a
Dodge Ram?
Miata?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's you need the right tool for the right job. And if if it sounds good, it is good.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the 103 and the U87 are two very common higher end mics that people strive to achieve to own that I've found.
Right.
The U87 is kind of this mythical beast. Now, there's a difference between the U87 and the U87 AI. U87 AI is the newer version of the U87, and the U87 a lot of people really like for music is the pre-1980 version of the U87s.
Mm-hmm.
Before they changed over and changed components and capsules. So a lot of people, especially from music, who are trying to find a U87, looking for that pre-1980 or that 1980 version of the U87. And in voiceover, a lot of what people find are the purple-badged U87 AIs that we'll see in the studios a lot of the times.
Right.
I've never had a TLM-103 in my studio, so I can't say how it sounds. I've heard lots of people on a TLM-103. I know the TLM-103 and the 102 tend to be brighter from what I've heard in my experience. But you know, a U87 has a very specific U87 sound, and a 103 is going to sound like a 103, which tends to be a little brighter and crisper on, and from what I've heard in my experience.
Yeah.
So,
I haven't had that experience. I had a 103. You know, I had a, you know, 20 years ago, I was using a 3035, an AT3035. Mm-hmm. It was my first microphone that came with something else.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and I used that for a while. And then when my voiceover business improved, I said, I'm going to get myself a TLM-10. And I used it for many years, and did my business improve afterwards? Yes. Now, was it because of the TLM-103 or the fact that I had been doing voiceover for several years and got better at it and moved away from my radio voice?
Right, yeah.
And trained myself out of it. Once I got a 416, though, the 103 ended up in its little casket.
And, absolutely, yeah.
And I ended up selling it. I just didn't use it anymore. This thing is, you know, it picks you up much cleaner, like, it's designed to hear the human voice from various different distances, and it makes you sound real, which is why I like that. Now, the TLM-103, what was it designed for? Again, it was designed for music, probably, music, probably for vocals.
Or horns.
Or horns. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, it's great microphone. The Germans make fabulous microphones, you know, the Neumanns, the Geffels, the AKG. Well, that's, you know, that Austrian.
And Neumann and Geffel are
the same company.
Same company, or flip sides of the.
Well, one was Germany and one was West Germany. Germany. Yeah, exactly. And now they're together. I had a Geffel mic for a while, you know, but more of a collector's item than anything else.
Right.
It sounded fabulous.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm of the opinion that it's not the microphone that makes you a great voice actor. It's the training and all the other things. And if you have a U87, that's not going to make you a better voice actor.
No, but
if you can't read your way out of a paper bag, it's going to prove that you can't. You know.
I mean, U87 is something to build up to. I mean, I bought my first U87 in December. Yeah. And finally, because I as a studio, I needed to have it. I find I use a 416 for my own stuff most of the time. 99% of the time. And when we have clients, given the option of the U87 or the 416, it's 50-50.
Yep. So. Last question from the one and only Jeff Holman.
Jeff.
Yes. Do you like to stand or sit when doing voiceovers, Dan and Tim?
That's not how I'm feeling.
Same here.
I mean,
you know, you've got a stool in your studio. I got a stool in mine. You know, if I'm doing a long format thing, I was doing a long audio brochure this week, and I sat, I tend to lean, you know, and you know, if it's a high energy thing, I might stand, but most of the time I've been sitting most of the time, but that's just because I'm old.
Yeah. I stand 99% of the time, unless it's something that's long form that I'm doing.
Yeah.
Or if I'm trying to, you know, if the character calls for, if the read calls for it, for a lot of times I was, for a while I was leaning on the back of a chair, leaning into the mic. Yeah. So I was trying to do like that real relaxed thing and lean on the back of a chair. I don't know if that really helped. But no, I stand most of the time. And then, you know, at least for myself, I'm in and out of the booth.
Right.
Boom, 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 back and forth. So I'll do a couple of reads, go out and listen to it, come back in. I don't have the time to sit. But something that's long form, absolutely. I mean, every audiobook that we've done, we have, you know, we do podcasts. We have, you know, people coming in and doing work with Realm, used to be Cereal Box. Every single person, because they're working for a 3-hour session.
Right.
And they will sit for 3 hours.
Right.
And you have to learn how to breathe differently. You have to learn how to adjust your energy so that you can give that same performance as if you're standing.
Right.
You know, it just, the physicality changes your performance.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I've been sitting a lot lately.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, anyway, thank you for all your questions. And Tim, thank you for answering those questions.
Thank you for having me.
This has been a fabulous session. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And we'll be right back to wrap things up after this.
Yeah. Hi, this is Carlos Alas Rocky, the voice of Rocco, and you're watching VoiceOver Body Shop.
The first thing I want to share with you is the plan for these classes, the five lessons that we're going to do. The first thing is we're going to start with an introduction today, and then we're also going to take a look at what I call the first discipline of voiceover, and that is the art of voiceover, commercials, audiobooks, animation, and so on. There's lots of them. In fact, some that you may not even be aware of. And then in the next lesson, we're going to take a look at the second discipline of voiceover, and that's what I call the commerce of voiceover. How to build your business. How to do the things that any business needs to do, but in particular, how to do those things for voiceover. in the third lesson and the fourth lesson, because it's such a big topic, we're actually going to do two parts. We're going to take a look at the science of voiceover. And the science of voiceover is the technology that you need to know.
In these modern times, every business needs a website. When you need a website for your voice acting business, there's only one place to go. Like the name says, voiceactorwebsites.com. Their experience in this niche webmaster market gives them the ability to quickly and easily get you from concept to live online in a much shorter time. When you contact voiceactorwebsites.com, their team of experts and designers really get to know you and what your needs are. They work with you to highlight what you do. Then they create an easily navigable website for your potential clients to get the big picture of who you are and how your voice is the one for them. Plus, voiceactorwebsites.com has other great resources like their practice script library and other resources to help your voiceover career flourish. Don't try it yourself. Go with the pros. VoiceActorWebsites.com, where your VO website shouldn't be a pain in the you-know-what.
This is the Latin Lover narrator from Jane the Virgin, Anthony Mendez, and you're enjoying Dan and George on The Voiceover Body Shop.
And we're back.
All right.
To say goodbye, but I'm glad you've been with us today. Next week on this very show, well, we won't be on because it'll be Labor Day and Rosh Hashanah, and the missus says, you're not doing a show. It's not going to happen. Not happening. But I planned on that months ago, so not a problem. But we return September 13th with vocal therapist Amy Chapman, who's fascinating, a wonderful lady, and we'll learn about how to take care of your voice. Then on September 27th, Legal Eagle Rob Siglampaglia will be. And we have him on at least once a year, and people have lots of questions about the legalities of voiceover.
Yeah.
Who knew that you could be liable because for whatever, all sorts of weird stuff anyway, but he's the guy that knows all that stuff. We need to thank our donors. For example, George Whittam Sr. He's not George Whittam. See, he's just George's dad. George S. Whittam, I think is his middle name.
Gotcha. Brian Page.
Rob Rader.
Patty Gibbons.
Ant Land Productions.
Michelle Blanker.
Christopher Epperson.
Sandra Manwiller.
Thank you for joining us, Sandra. For a fairly new name for us. Nice. Philip Sapir.
Trey Mosley.
Shelly Avellino, a woman who I've smoked several cigars with. Neither here nor there. And
Thomas Pinto.
Tom Pinto,
yes.
All righty. Again, if they want to get in touch with you over at the Soundbox, how do they do that?
Soundbox.la.
All right. And if you want some help with me with your home studio and you want to learn it from the ground up, which I specialize in for people who haven't done it at all, go to homevoiceoverstudio.com and see what I do and get in contact. We need to thank our sponsors, Harlan Hogan's Voiceover Essentials, been with us since day one, 10 years ago.
Wow.
You know, they said it wouldn't last. But anyway, Voiceover Extra, Source Elements, the makers of Source Connect, voiceoverheroes.com, voiceactorwebsites.com, and JMC Demos, when quality matters. We'd like to thank Jeff Holman for getting it done over in the chat room, giving us all these questions that we love answering. Sue Merlino for getting it done again as our amazing director. Take a bow. And of course, Lee Penny for being Lee Penny. And Tim Friedlander, thank you for being my guest host last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's been great.
This is really what we don't get to talk very much.
We don't, no.
Yeah, especially over the last 18 months.
Not to people, at least. We talk to ourselves all the time.
Maybe that's true. We do talk to ourselves in a booth. Anyway, we'll be back next time we're back. And thanks for joining us. I'm Dan Leonard.
Tim Friedlander.
And this is VoiceOver.
Body Shop.
Or VO. BS. Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Take it easy, guys. Cool.